Welcome back to the Ek Attack Podcast. As always, I'm your host, King Gizzard, Jay. Joined as always is my co-host, the Lizard Wizard, Z. How are you doing today, Z?
Oh, not so bad.
Good to hear. Almost Thanksgiving time in our part of the world, neck of the woods.
That's true. It'll be past Thanksgiving by the time anyone hears this, but that's all right.
That's true. It's about the spirit. We know when we're recording it, so it'll all be okay. So, we saw a movie called Knives Out, Glass Onion, which, you know, if it was in last week, as you
something like that.
Of course always do every week, you listen to all the episodes, you knew we were going to watch it. Another Andor movie special. It was only in theaters this week.
That's
right?
Correct. This has become something of a bit of a tradition for you and I, isn't it? Going to see movies on and around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we did House of Gucci last year.
We did. Prior to that, a year or two before that, we saw Fantastic Beasts 2 on Black Friday. Today, this is the day before Thanksgiving. Last year, we on Thanksgiving Day itself, so we're, you know, jumping all right around and on top of and adjacent to. It's a lot of fun.
It's a grand old time. And this movie will release like around Christmas on Netflix?
Yeah, around then it gets its wide release. So, like, yeah, it's going to be... This is weird. I suppose, right off the bat here, being a mystery thing, right, I would say it's pretty perilous to... I don't know. The whole movie is, you know, the whole draw of it is about spoilers, kind of. If that makes sense?
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of discuss, you know, some of the superhero stuff, even if you get into the spoilers, and, like, people will still enjoy it, because it's not really... The plot isn't necessarily the main draw for everyone, but that's, I mean, that's what these movies are. Yeah. Being a mystery, murder mystery thing like this, that's all it is. It's all plot.
Yeah. So it's plot all the way down.
Yeah. It's pretty difficult to discuss it at great detail without getting into that. Especially, yeah, given that most people are not going to have a chance to see this. Like, by the time this episode comes out, it will be...
gone from theaters.
I think so. So, we've not already done it. So, I think we're going to be pretty cautious about... what we discuss. I'm probably not get super, super deep into it, but
yeah.
I'll tell you this, Jack. I'm not afraid to let you know this. I think of those three movies, I think this best one.
You know, I gotta say, as much as it pains me, you might be onto something. It hurts me to let go of Adam Driver's lack of an Italian accent, but sometimes you gotta accept when things are better.
When things are better than House of Gucci.
When it's good, it's good. And, you know, hard to beat it. Now,
get your heart out, Ridley Scott.
Yeah, get fucked, idiot. Make a better fucking movie. Jesus Christ.
Stop being such an old man about it all.
Yeah, Marvel movies. Shut up. I saw a quote from Quentin Tarantino today, speaking of Marvel movies, that Marvel actors are not movie stars.
It's kind of right, though.
It's just the characters.
There's something to that.
Something to that.
Movie stars are... they like don't exist in the same way. It is kind of a dying breed. It's about, which I don't know if that's a bad. I don't know. Everyone seems to want to frame it as like this great like tragedy, but it's like who cares?
I
don't care.
I certainly don't care. I don't think we should be glorifying them.
Like
movie stars, like peak glorification.
They're like famous still. I mean, we're not going to pretend they're not famous. They're just not as famous.
They're not as mysterious. It's not like John Wayne. Like, oh wow, John Wayne's so cool. Oh wait, he's actually
basically
a huge
what that's saying
racist.
Is like, hey, people used to go see movies just based off whatever doofus was in them. Now they actually only go to see the movie if they like it. Oh no!
What?
And this is bad for the medium. Why? I don't know.
Whatever. They can never pick.
We don't need to do this. We do this every week with the fucking Marvel shit. We get it. Yeah. We get it, guys. You're all too smart for us. You probably are. Whatever.
Who cares?
So Knives Out. Knives Out. We gotta stop calling them. It's just called Glass Onion. It's only called Knives Out for
marketing purposes.
Dumb dumbs who wouldn't know otherwise.
But I think we can start with like more of the theater we were in.
Yeah, you want to do some theater theatrics?
Yeah, we can do a little bit of theater theatrics because we had a fair bit. So we usually watch movies in Regal theaters because those are pretty nice and Zach likes them a lot.
That's my preference. Yeah.
Preference. So
I've got the Crown Club card. So.
They do. Yeah. So he's bought into their cabal. And so, but this movie was not playing in a Regal, which is odd to me.
Also, they have RPX.
Right. Also, they have RPX, which I will admit is very, very nice. I will not harsh on that. So, I went to see it in an AMC instead.
It wasn't playing. It only made it out to 600 theaters, I did see. So, this is, I guess we could just say that. It is, this is the first, like, wide release that Netflix film's ever gotten. They do this with whatever films they want to put up for Oscar contention, right? They'll put it out in like whatever, I don't know, whatever the bare minimum is for the Oscars, because you need to up until I think still currently actually it needs to play in theaters to be eligible, right?
Yes,
so they do that. But this is the first time they've ever actually gone out of their way to give it a wide release. I don't even know why that is. I can't believe this is the one movie they think would have the single biggest draw of anything they've ever done, right? I mean, I don't know. I guess it all depends on what you think their motives are.
There's yeah.
probably some... I mean, we always... I say this a lot of, like, I assume the best of these executives and people of, like, oh, they're making money moves. But most... They're all idiots.
They don't know what they're talking about.
If we've learned anything this past year, it's that they're all dum-dums. So I don't know what they're actually doing, but...
I think the most generous interpretation of that is that they released it in a lot of theaters... But only for this week, when people kind of see their once a year movie, and then they're like, okay, everyone who sees it is going to talk about it. So when it comes around for Christmas, when people are getting things, they'll get a Netflix subscription and watch the movie.
Or you could even think like they did it on a holiday weekend because they didn't actually think that many people would go see it, and so they'd still get. I don't know. I also wonder if it wasn't a thing that like Rian Johnson pushed for.
Right.
I mean, because the first movie of this was just a normal theatrical release, right?
Yeah,
which is something I did have a little trepidation about, honestly. It was like, how are you going to do the first movie in a series like, and then like, yeah, lock the rest of them behind a streaming or whatever. So, but yeah, this is the first time they've done this. They've given it a wide release, and it's still pretty limited. 600 theaters is not a whole heck of a ton. Like, I just for comparison's sake, Endgame was in 4,600 theaters. So,
yeah. Bit of a caveat there.
Now, that broke records, I think, for how many theaters it was shown in. So it's kind of opposite ends of the spectrum, but just for reference sake. It was weird seeing the Netflix logo in a movie theater, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I heard people commenting on that around us.
I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
And I think that's a perfect segue of people commenting around us to tie into our theater theatrics. Because motherfuckers could not sit still or shut the fuck up when we were watching this movie. Just every literally almost every single kind of movie theater distraction occurred. People got up. I think, what, seven people? Different distinct individuals got up during the movie, walked across the screen, and then sat back down.
And the way that this is why I don't prefer this theater, but the way it's a little lower, it's not as, like, inclined with the seating. And so when someone gets up and walks across, I mean, they're just walking right across your line of sight there. There's no getting around it.
Yeah.
Someone in our row they didn't take their phone call, but their phone rang twice. And I saw, and I watched out of the corner of my eye, I watched this lady take her, like, first of all, it took her forever to fish her phone out. And because she's got that, you know, leisurely
pace
old person pace about them where they're just not bothered. And then I saw her just put it back in. I was like, she didn't mute that. And then went off again.
I did hear the person next to her, like, who she's with, go, why didn't you mute that? Put it on mute. So at least the people in our party were like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
See, so I worry when we do this segment, we come across as like, well, just jerks, basically.
Absolutely.
But I got to say, these particular people who are in our screen here, I try not to, and I feel like we usually don't bring it up if you're just like enjoying the movie, even a bit of cheers or laughs or whatever. But we often talk of this about this in the context of the Marvel stuff, which at this point literally has built in cheer breaks. I think we did talk about it actually when we saw it.
Doctor Strange.
I was gonna say Far From Home. No Way Home.
No,
I'll never get that right for as long as I live.
I don't think anyone can because John Watts has filed against you. He's going, I'm gonna fuck him up so bad.
So No Way Home had some of those where the cheering and the whooping and the hollering went beyond even the cheer breaks, and I was like, all right, we need to come on. Listen, I want to hear it. This movie doesn't have any of those built in, of course, and there's people who are. I mean, again, I don't want to harsh anyone's vibe.
Yeah. I'm not trying to, yuck their yum.
But, like, a little over-enthusiastic to the point where if you're, like, again, and I feel like it's a pretty reasonable line to draw. But, like, if you're going to laugh, that's fine. Laugh. If you find it funny, good on you. But these people were just, like, they were commentating, which I think I said from, I don't know, some movie we went to see. Or I said the same thing as, like, you can't just be saying, like, oh, that's funny because of that. Like, just full-on sentences, they're yelling. Because they're the fucking overpowering the sound of the movie. Like, it was excessive.
It was.
I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like, yeah, man, we're all watching the movie. We're all sitting here watching the movie. You don't need to, come on.
Yeah, I did think some of
them. Can you believe that?
They're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. It's like, I don't know, man, you didn't know a twist would happen in a fucking mystery movie?
No way! And I'm just like, dude, come on, we are all watching the movie. Please.
Yeah, it was one guy in particular who I wanted to find.
Oh, he's the one guy. Yeah, it was all the one guy.
I was like,
I wanted to find him too. I had half a mind to get up and pull a House of Gucci on him. Stand up, start screaming. Just, who is that? Produce him for me!
Reveal himself to me! Coward! Have at thee!
Let those you sit near him reveal him to me, or they shall all suffer!
Possum in an opossum movie!
That's what they do in a... See, like, sometimes I wish we had a... Like, an Alamo Draft House. Because, you know, they don't play that. They don't play that nonsense at those theaters. If you talk, if you're ever on the phone, you get, like, lifetime bans.
Holy shit.
They dish them out like no one's business.
Yeah, because sometimes we...
Much more courteous audience at those.
Oh, yeah.
Half the people we've ever sat in movie theaters with clearly would be...
Gone forever. Gone. They'd never see a movie as long as they lived if that was the law.
Ah,
but which is why, as I've said before, sometimes movies are just better at home.
No. This is why they're better at the theater.
You agreed with me.
I said it last week.
You agreed with me at the movie.
Uh-uh.
Don't try to turn against me on the show.
I did not.
I walked out and I said, I saw movies better at home, and you said, nah, maybe you got something to you.
No, I didn't. Did not.
You considered it at the very least.
You can't prove it.
You know in your heart.
It's what I said last week, and I'm going to stick by it. It's more fun. It's fun. What a time it is. Or not last week. We did, but when we, that's what I said with Black Panther. You can't get that at home, Jack. You can't get people, you can't get fire alarms pulled at home, can you?
Good.
No, but it's a story, isn't it? No, I wanted to strangle that man. I was it infuriated me because it was always at weird times too. I gotta say, like, this is another thing where I guess this is just us being judgy and just me coming across as a real asshole for the segment that we insist on doing. But
every time we gotta do it.
Like some of these people I feel like don't get it. Maybe the point of a movie like this is that he's sprinkled enough stuff in there that there's humor to tickle everyone's fancy at times, but like, yeah. I feel like fucking Benoit Blanc would make an actual funny, like, witty joke, and it's just crickets, but then, like, he'd lean against a statue of a butt, and everyone was dying, and I'm just like, come on, that's not actually, like, a joke, is it? Is that a joke that we're supposed to actually be audibly laughing at? And they're just dying. Yeah, it was very early on. It really set the tone, because they lost their mind, just, like, like, for... good, like, 10 seconds straight, it felt like. And I couldn't hear what anyone was saying anymore. And I was just like, oh, no, this is... Like, well beyond after the joke has wrapped up and the film has moved on, these guys had not. They were still dying.
I was really like, oh, this is going to be the whole movie. Luckily, it was kind of the beginning and a little bit the end, but not too much in the middle of, like, the really important parts.
Mm-hmm.
So that was better. But, you know, with that, I think...
And we should probably move on. We've been making fun of people.
People we don't know and we'll never know for enjoying a film that we were also in.
Too much. For enjoying a film that we also enjoyed, but they enjoyed it in the wrong way.
Yeah, not like we would have enjoyed it, so they're wrong and probably bad.
Yeah, no, I think evil is correct. Evil. I think that evil's on the right track.
Because people are born evil, and it's these people.
So now we got that out of the way.
Yeah, so the movie itself. So, yeah, we won't probably go into, like, deep spoilers, because you won't see this movie for another month after this episode
goes up.
So what do we think about the cast, then? Like,
the cast is kind of the star in... I would say it's one of the big draws of Knives Out, right? And it remains so here. It's a big ensemble. A lot of fun character actors, really, right? Which is kind of what it was with Knives Out, too, right? In a lot of ways. Just good, man. I mean, obviously, so Benoit Blanc... your leading man, Daniel Craig. He's great, of course. I love Daniel Craig. Always have. It's very funny that he does a goofy Foghorn Leghorn accent. It's
so funny.
Never short of amusement, is it?
No.
And his witticisms and his sayings and his fun southern ways.
Southern drawl.
Very good. Very good. All his little sayings. Makes me chuckle. So he's great. He's doing the same thing. I mean, what do you want? That's the whole deal with these kind of characters, right? These detective guys.
The guy be eccentric.
He's kind of eccentric and fun the whole time. And then at the end, he's like, but here's the thing. You guys all, you don't even understand. I'm going to explain it all to you because I'm so smart. And you're like, man, he's good.
God, he's obviously so good. Even though he doesn't know who hires him.
Who hired me?
Who hired me? Confounds me. Compels me, though.
Love it.
That's great. I think, I will say, compared to the first movie, I think the ensemble got a little more play with each other, I think, in the last movie than this movie.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, there are more of them. Like, it's a multiple parts of a whole family, and these are just like, what is it, 7 people on an island?
Something like that. Yeah,
something like that. That's the basic premise, I guess. We'll say that much: is that all these people, including Benoit Blanc, are invited to this island by this rich guy they know, played by Edward Norton. He's the rich guy, and they're gonna do some kind of like, ooh, murder mystery party, but
dinner party thing,
and
something, things happen, things start happening. So I'll say, like Catherine Hahn, she was fine.
Yeah,
I feel like people really excited about, people really really were like high on her after WandaVision. Which is good, no? She's good. She was fine in this. I didn't like her character very much as a person, but as it comes to turn out, you don't necessarily love any of these people, which is very much on brand for Knives Out as well. Yeah. I will say that, like, I don't think this was too... It wasn't like a retread in a bad way of Knives Out. I don't think he, like, overdid the similarities or anything. It's definitely not like the same thing over again, but there's a lot of themes that are consistent, I would say, and ideas, which I appreciate, and I think is probably very much intentional and might even be in the third one. It might continue to be a thing. A lot of, like, class stuff, right, as well, which is, we talked about it last week as well. We talked about it with Andor. I mean, lots of, you know?
Yeah.
Becoming a lot of themes. Aware of things. Like, so yeah, there's this idea of, like, these rich people and what that does to you and all that. So yeah,
they do whatever they want. They get what they want. Yeah. How it corrupts you. And
yeah. So that's still, that's very much present in this one, like it was in the last one. And in the same way, yeah, pretty much all the characters are jerks on some level.
Yeah.
We had Leslie Odom Jr. We had Dave Bautista, obviously. Our main sort of guy there is Edward Norton. He's good. I would say the real star besides Daniel Craig, of course, though, is Janelle Monáe.
She's
Andy.
Andy.
She is excellent. There's a little bit more of her portrayal as you come to see later on, and she does a really good job. So definitely the standout to me, I would say. And then Jessica Henwick. She's not in it as much as I would have liked.
She's Wisp?
Her name's Peg.
Oh, Peg, right.
This is Madeline Klein as Whiskey. And Kate Hudson as Birdie. Everyone's pretty good. Everyone's very distinct. We get a lot of, like, different character, which is, again, very much kind of like from the last one as well. Mm. And it's very, very classic, I would say, for these types of stories, right? These murder mystery, everyone's in a thing.
Yeah, everyone's got their own agendas and stuff.
Well, and they're all kind of like, they can be kind of caricatures almost, like very stereotypical, very much archetypical, like, and she's this character and he's this one, he's the smart scientist guy, which again is it's like on brand for like a, you know, Agatha Christie type thing too, so very fun. I don't know, it's good.
It is quite good.
The writing is good, dialogue is very fun.
I think, like the last movie, the setting it takes place in is very interesting. This is a bit of a different one. There's more outside used. Obviously, the last movie focuses on the house and all the various trinkets and doodads and all that. Like, just the pure density of a scene. This one takes place in an island in Greece. So it's a lot of bright, a lot of white and vibrant colors and plants and, like, architecture like that. A lot of glass because of the glass onion. So that was all very nice. I really enjoyed that. Benoit Blanc, of course, does his classic random analogy where he just referenced it 100 times, like a donut's hole and a donut's hole, and everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man?
See, I was trying to, I didn't think too much of it, but you remember when we did the trailer, I was like, so what is a glass onion? I guess it's kind of obvious in retrospect, right?
Yeah.
It's got layers, but you can still see through it.
The facade of clarity, of complexity. Yeah, I did like that. I like another.
Or is it the facade of non-complexity? You think you can see through it, but there's lots of, it kind of works both ways. Yeah. Right? You think it has a bunch of layers, but it turns out you can see right through them. Or you think, I can see right through all these, but no, the layers are still there. It's fun. It works.
It really makes you think.
It's a donut's hole,
Oh. And it's like, yeah, the point. I do think, overall, this movie's ending is a little less, not less spectacular, but I don't know how to say this without giving away what happens, but maybe definitive. Or, like, tangible, I guess.
Maybe it is a bit like you have to just kind of, like, know what's about to happen.
Yeah.
Although I think it's pretty, I would say it's pretty
clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I get most of it across, but I think that there's a certain point where it's...
I found it to be pretty satisfying still for the most part.
I think, like, the very end when the there's a poetic twist that happens, I think that was very good. I liked that a lot. The other thing they do in all these movies, like a whodunit, which I always love, when it's like, you saw the scene before, but here's what else was happening.
Yeah,
and I always love those.
I think, so we watched, we saw Death on the Nile very beginning of this year, you remember? And I think
100 years ago, it feels.
And I think I had the same thing where I was like, I don't know if people who see these movies, you know, people who are really into these and stuff, if they go in expecting to be able to try to figure it out, I think I said the same thing. It's like when you're watching a movie in particular, like reading a mystery novel like that is one thing because you can kind of like flip back and forth at your own pace. But like when you're watching a movie, you just have to, you take it as it comes, right? You don't have much time to like sit there and digest. And the thing is like, I don't know if that's really the point. Maybe that's something I'm imposing on it. I'm not saying it even bothered me, but I don't think this one in particular, there's a lot you don't know until you know kind of thing.
Yes.
How could you possibly get? And this is how I feel, about a lot of mystery movies. So maybe this is just me expecting something different, but I don't know. I would say that about the twists and turns. Is like, I just don't think you could ever
have guessed such a thing.
Yeah, I don't think that's what this is for. I think it's more just you enjoy it as it unfolds and the roller coaster of it all.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think there are some points where it's just like, actually, I was lying the whole time.
Right.
And
how could you?
Where Benoit Blanc's like, actually, here's what actually is going on, and I was lying the whole time. It's like, well, I would never been able to. I would have to make a wild assumption based on no evidence that you had all this information and you were keeping it from someone.
But I will say that is something that's, I think, strong about it as well, though. Very much like the first one, it sort of takes a non-traditional approach to some of the stuff. And, you know, in the same way that, like, Knives Out is really kind of like a, I don't know, it's almost out of order. It's, what do people call it? They call it a...
non-linear storytelling?
Well, I just mean, like, it's not as much of a whodunit because you learn how it happens quite early on in the film. Oh,
it's a how did it?
It's like a how... Yeah, it's like kind of a play on that formula. And this is a similar thing that the formula's being played with there in an interesting way. We're about like halfway through. They're like, hold on, we're flipping it on its head. So that's, yeah, I found that really interesting and super compelling to watch. And again, I think, especially with a structure like that, I don't think it's necessarily expected that anyone would figure it out. Until towards the end, I think you can start to put things together before they happen.
Yeah. I want to say
that... But for too much of this movie, you don't have enough of the pieces to possibly be able to do it, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. And also, like...
And again, keep cutting you off. But, like, there's just points where a thing is shown to you as happening a certain way, but that's just... Yeah, it's just a lie, or it's not how... Something isn't how it seems. But, again, you as the audience, you wouldn't be able to know until you know.
So. Yeah. I would think that also it kind of... There's like, a shift in the movie, like you mentioned. And I think, like, the movie kind of sets it up, but almost to its detriment, because it's like, all right, well... What's happening? I know the movie isn't over, so what's going to happen next? And then it's like, all right, another thing.
Yeah, it does mess with the pacing to some extent, I suppose. Yeah,
and it's like, okay. I mean, I still enjoyed it, but I definitely think, I just think, part of me was thinking the whole time, I'm like, can you do this movie twice? I think not in too much of a similar vein in some ways to Thor 3 and 4, where it's like, all right, you did a Ragnarok and it shook it up, everybody loved it. Can you do that again, or is it something you can kind of only do once for it to really hit the way you want it to?
I think, I don't know, I think this is different enough. It's still messing with the formula just your classic murder mystery, but it's definitely changed enough. I don't think it's not the same twist necessarily as Knives Out at all, right?
No.
So I think, yeah, I think it's fine, and I think whatever he would do for the third one would be some other tweak of it that would be interesting to watch. Again, not that I did, like, you know, I liked Death and I when we saw it, but that's very much the more traditional, just like, and then it happened, and then we figured out.
Yeah,
more twists and turns and all that.
Yeah. So, because we're avoiding, I guess, spoilers, who do you think's going to be in Knives Out 3?
Oh, my God. Could be anyone, right?
Could be
literally. I told you last week, I think Adam Driver feels like he could do it.
Anya Taylor-Joy, she's doing a ton of movies.
Oh, yeah, literally. Anya Taylor-Joy sounds like a good get. But, like, okay, but the thing I said for this one, right? And I think it kind of applies. I feel like it's a lot of character actors. It's not necessarily A-listers who are in these movies.
Right.
So, like, Edward Norton, he's not... I mean, he's very well-known. He's been working for a long time, but he's not...
I don't think he's A-list anymore.
Yeah, he was a leading man in his day, but I don't know. It's, yeah.
We're not post-Fight Club anymore.
Right.
We are... Well, I guess, well, technically, we are. We've been post-Fight Club ever since Fight Club.
That's right.
But, you know... The height of Fight Club kind of has died down. He did The Incredible Hulk, and he's been middling ever since. So I definitely think Adam Driver. I would very much like to see that because he can play comedy very well.
Yeah, I don't know. Adam Driver is somewhere in the middle. I think I think he's enough. He hasn't been much of a leading man other than like Star Wars.
Marriage Story.
I mean, we did just talk about House of Gucci. Whatever. The point is, I think
he's... And Last Duel.
I think he fits.
I think so too. We can probably pick two more each.
Okay.
We each three. So you picked Adam Driver. I don't know. I want to pick first. Ooh, I don't know.
I also feel like Anya Taylor-Joy could maybe still win. Yeah. I mean, she's blown up in a big way, even in the last, like, year or two.
Yeah, she's been a lot of stuff.
But she still does, like, weirder stuff like this, so.
Like the menu and all that?
Yeah, throw her in there. Or Thomas and McKenzie. Either one. You know, that's pick true. Your pick.
I'll take them both, because I can't think of any other actors. You know what? I'm going to put Simon Pegg in there.
Simon Pegg could do it. Yeah, yeah. I like that.
Because I think he could be, like...
Multinational?
He could just play, like, the erotic... He could just be Scotty from Star Trek, but in a murder mystery.
Sure. He could be any of them.
Yeah.
Just quite Scottish. Yeah. Play up the nationality. I like that. They also... I mean, you got to do intergenerational, right? We have a bunch of different age groups. Who's, like, an older actor we could bring on in?
Old actor. Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks, maybe. He might be too big. You know what?
I'm trying to think
of people... So he said Adam Driver, and I thought that... After I said it, even I was like, "Oh wait, Ryan Johnson, Adam Driver, that works." What if Mark Hamill?
Ooh, a Mark Hamill Adam Driver thing?
That'd be either fun. Or. Oh, I mean, either even or. If, even without him, I think Mark Hamill fits. Like, yeah, because he's very much a character guy.
Yeah,
I think that works.
That's a pretty good one. I don't think he's done a ton of non-voice acting roles since.
No, it's been pretty sporadic since the like 80s, really. So,
and he just does the Joker and like Chucky and stuff.
Yeah, he does
for his voice.
Oh, it's really the world's his oyster.
It's really.
There's tons of like fan casts out there already where people have been spitballing.
Yeah. Bet you Henry Cavill's the top of all of them.
I think Henry Cavill's too much.
I think he probably could do it, but I think he's too much of an A-lister.
I think Chris Evans was right on the edge of that. Yes. Also, I think Ana de Armas is a very similar thing where she's probably actually caught up quite a bit more even in the last 2 years
than she was. 100%.
Then. So
I think that was... I don't want to say, but maybe probably the start of her up. Because after I saw her in that, I felt like she was in every other thing I saw.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, you know, good on her. She's very good in that movie. Then she made The Gray Man, and I was like, well, can't win them all, can't
apparently you? Blonde's not very good either, but...
That's what I've heard.
Likely not her fault, is it?
Right. Since we've got three of the people in Gray Man, Ryan Gosling, you making it in?
No, he's too much. No, you can't do Ryan Gosling, because he's Ryan Gosling. He's fucking...
It would distract the movie, I think, because they'd be like, Ryan Gosling, you're in this movie. Not in a movie. Get out of here.
That's what I mean. That's why I think, like, Lower tier. Character actors.
I never know who's in what tier of actor, though.
Oh, I don't know either. I don't think anyone knows, right? There's not a fucking list, is there?
No. This is a ranking that comes out every month.
Unless they would know.
You know,
they probably get the rankings. We're not privy, but...
No, it would break everything if we get the rankings. Like MySpace. You know what I just thought of?
What's that?
Sean Bean in the movie. He gets killed.
Oh, you could do Sean Bean.
And he gets killed immediately.
Why not? Yeah.
He loves getting killed in movies. He got trampled by all those cows in that one movie.
He did. Chop his head off when he's Ned Stark or whatever.
Yeah. Kill him when he's that villain in Mission Impossible. No. Not Mission Impossible. In James Bond, right? He's a James Bond villain, isn't he?
Yes. He's 006. He turns evil, yeah. Really good one. That's Pierce Brosnan's finest one. At the end, he drops him off of a satellite. It's pretty dumb because he drops him from this massive fall and then Sean Bean lives. Very briefly so that he can then be even like further crushed by like the falling satellite. It's a good line though. Because at the end he's like, for England, James? He's like, no, for me. And he drops him. It's cool. It's
pretty good.
I love James Bond. We got apparently there's a mycast.io website where people do fan casts. We got Jonathan Groff on here.
Who's that? Show me. Do you have a photo of
him? I don't know what you'd know him from. He's like,
I have no idea.
He's Kristoff's voice in Frozen.
King George in Hamilton.
Correct.
That's all I did.
Daisy Ridley. Oh, she would work.
That'd be a good one.
See, I'm
John Boyega, maybe?
I'm like cautious about like too much crossover between the
Star Wars
the Poirot ones.
Oh yes.
And this because like Leslie Odom Jr. was in this and Murder on the Orient Express. He might be the only big one. But then like Daisy Ridley was also in Murder on the Orient Express, so should be careful there. Maybe.
Yeah.
Sadie Sink. That works. I like that.
Which one?
Chris Hemsworth. I think Chris Hemsworth too much. Oh, Kelly Marie Tran. Oh, that'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. She like deserves. She can get a win.
Chloe Grace Moretz. I think she works. Why not? Ben Affleck. No, that's too much. That's
too big.
Much. You can't do. Oh, Maya Hawke.
I'll do Maya Hawke.
All right, that works.
One of the Finn Wolfhard, maybe? Stranger Things kids?
That's who Sadie Sink is. She's one of the Stranger Things kids.
Oh, yeah. She's the redhead.
Also, this list also has Millie Bobby Brown.
I was going to say, if anyone's going to get it. Then the girl got two Enola Holmes movies.
See, Letitia Wright, but she was in Death on the Nile. I feel like, is that too much?
It might be.
You can't just make them all into the...
Who plays Poirot? Can he be in it?
Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh. He can be in it. Just really just throw it to the wind. Have them all.
Maybe.
What do you think the title should be? Something.
Oh my god. I couldn't possibly. I couldn't say.
Yeah, because I wouldn't expect Glass Onion.
No, yeah. It's something, yeah, it's some weird, very creative thing that he comes up with. I don't know, how do you come up with shit like this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is so much more than even just like a, obviously like a, and then the, it's the gray man, and he's in the CIA, but the CIA is evil, oh my gosh, and maybe they don't, and you gotta get the list. It's like, yeah, we get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen this movie.
That's, I mean, good on you guys, but like, yeah, I feel like I could work that out if you gun to my head, I need to write a script of an action movie. But then this is like, it's twist on twist. And how do you do it?
How do you balance it all?
I don't know.
That's impressive, I'll say the least. I probably couldn't do it.
How do you know the end, but then you also, how do you know to fill enough in, but not too much, and you keep everyone on their toes, it's great, man. So what I'm saying is Rian Johnson, probably the greatest living filmmaker.
I have to say so.
And as of course, The Last Jedi is the greatest Star Wars film ever made, likely.
About Rogue One.
Yeah, no. But The Last Jedi, though. Good. I mean, good on Rogue One. But
and Solo? It was a Star Wars story.
Yeah, Solo's really good. But I think The Last Jedi is doing a little more. I think it's got something to say. Rian Johnson was like, I'm gonna do some things here.
About our society?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
About their society. About Star Wars society. And you know, what Star Wars means in our society. It's got a lot of that going on. And like what... How they're pushing up against each other. What Star Wars does to society. What society's done to Star Wars. It's got ideas. I love it. Do you see, as part of the press for that, I think it was on the red carpet, someone was like, hey, Star Wars? And he was like, I'd love to.
I love Star Wars.
I'd love to. He said, I pray to God I get to return. I was like, that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
That's not like mealy mouth, like, oh, maybe if we get around to it. He's like, I hope so.
I would do anything.
I would really like to. Like, that to me is pretty strong. So I'm... Cross my fingers every day. I hope we do it. But the man, again, I don't know how you, like, look at these movies. Come on. He's great. Again, he's clearly has a very creative mind for this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, say what you want about any of his other, but like Looper, like there's, he's just got ideas. He's clearly got,
he's got some thoughts.
He's got fucking thoughts. I don't know. It's a nothing thing to say, but I feel like there's some filmmakers out there who don't really have
Michael thoughts. Bay.
Sure. I wouldn't necessarily want Michael Bay to make a Star Wars movie. I mean, good on him for what he does or whatever. I know people like his work, but like,
it would be the fastest Star Wars film ever created by man. He'd get that shit done in 2 months flat. He'd done in time.
Or at least with principle.
Yeah.
He only needs to film 6 scenes with actual actors, and the rest is just...
explosions.
He set it over to ILM, and
they go, all right, tell me when it's done. Call me in a month when it's... 3 months when it's done.
But yeah. God, I love Rian Johnson. He said his next thing is just the third one of this, but then he's done. And I can't imagine he would follow it up. He's got a contract for 2 more with Netflix, and then I would think that he would take a break from it for at least a good long while.
Yeah, I think...
maybe do 3 more Star Wars movies.
I think doing a fourth, any more Knives Out would be too much.
Oh, that'd be too much.
Because yeah. How many mysteries can you tell?
Right, and then back-to-back-to-back with that, I think you gotta... just, yeah.
You'd run out of actors.
You'd think so, but man, these are very fun. I would say, in general, definitely lived up to the expectation. Pretty much on par.
I'd say give it a check it out on Christmas when it comes back around. I'll probably watch it again when it comes back around.
Maybe. I'll probably get some people to watch it who obviously didn't see it and have a time with it.
Yeah.
It's cool. I heard some people chatting on their way out of the theater of like, oh, I think I like the other one more. It's almost not worth thinking about, you ask me. Yeah. Movies like these are totally both self-contained. They're not. They don't really have any bearing on each other at all.
Yeah, they don't even.
Not even really. They don't. Other than the same character appears, they truly have nothing. So, you know, I guess maybe Knives Out I'd liked a little bit more, but they're just both really good.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't even reference the first movie.
Oh, no, not even.
I thought he would.
No, I really don't. Yeah, I don't think it comes up at all. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Any rating for the movies?
Six knives out of the knife block.
It's pretty good.
Four layers deep in the glass onion.
Oh, wow. I'll do 3 Ben Wells out of 5 blocks.
Six donut holes. Donut holes, donuts. It's like what I'm thinking is like a, what's the medium sized box of Timbits?
Is it, I don't know.
There it is.
Oh.
Whenever they figure it out.
whenever scientists can crack that, that'll be the name we
use. That'll be, so that many donut holes out of the box. There it is. All right. Go all see right. It.
Well, you can't. You won't.
But it's too late for you.
It'll be too late. Ah, gotcha.
It'll be on Netflix. You have Netflix, so of course you'll see it.
We know if you're listening to this, you probably have Netflix.
Well, everyone has Netflix, right? Or you steal your cousins or whatever. I mean, we get it.
We get it. We know the score.
I don't judge. This movie, I mean, not getting into specifics, there's definitely a bit of a Eat the Rich vibe going on in this movie, I mean.
And God bless him.
Oh, very much. Again, like the last one, he clearly is going for some of, like, Ryan Johnson's got a bone to pick. Again, he's got something to say about, like, the wealth.
How
I will say, okay, I do want to say this, it's maybe a bit of a spoiler, but I absolutely adore that one of the main ideas of this movie is that sometimes, maybe most of the time, maybe always, billionaires are just idiots.
Yes, I very much enjoyed that he was just the billionaire is just a dumb guy.
He's got this whole speech where he's like, I would have assumed, I thought, we all thought, being a billionaire, you must be a genius. You're just an idiot.
Yeah, he says a bunch of words wrong. He says wrong words.
It's very good. And I kind of noticed it too. I don't know if you picked up, but there's a couple times where I'm like, what the fuck did that mean? Like, I didn't give it too much thought, but even just in the moment, I'm like, wait, what? What did that sentence mean? Okay, whatever. This guy's a big smart guy. But then there's this little montage where he's like, none of those words don't mean what that means. Wait, yeah. No.
And he does it even after he points out it happens again. Very good. Oh, God.
Very good. But I was like, how absolutely fucking prudent with the timing, huh? I mean, it's just a coincidence, but like with things going on currently.
There are a couple things like that in the movie where it's like, huh, weird.
How could he have known that it would come out this month?
Yeah, this month. Of all months. Huh, crazy. When two people who have a lot of money do a lot of weird stuff and call it like they see it. Uh-oh. I did think was also funny is that, I don't know, it's not really a spoiler, it's just a funny thing, that Benoit Blanc is just playing Among Us in a bathtub.
Well, so there's like a COVID thing here. It's not really touching. I don't know. I feel weird about it because it's, you ask me, like it didn't actually factor much into the plot. No, I would assume it's just an artifact of this is when he was writing it kind of thing. Yes. But it makes me wonder why they even... I almost feel like you could have ignored it. It's such a weird thing, seeing stuff going forward here. You know, different projects, be it film or television. And whether they choose to...
Reference the pandemic.
Yeah, reference it or not. I don't know. I wonder if it's not just going to date stuff. Especially because there's a weird plot contrivance in this where they take a special mouth spray to... I don't know.
Stop the COVID?
So stop the COVID so that they can ignore it. And I'm like, Ryan Johnson, you could have just ignored it. Like, you didn't.
You didn't have to. You can take this movie in any year and just be like, COVID doesn't exist.
It factors in very slightly, just to the idea that everyone's kind of like stir crazy. But other than that, it's like you probably didn't have to do that. I mean, this movie came out in 2022. This is almost like a memory to us, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. But he did play Among Us because it was 2020.
And he was playing and he didn't get it. And he's like, what? I hate this game.
That is funny.
And he just had like just a bunch of cameos. He's playing with former LA Laker Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and that one red-haired lady from Russian Doll, Natasha something or other, who's also in another movie. I can't remember.
That was funny. I don't know why Benoit Blanc would... Well, I guess none. I guess Benoit Blanc's just friends with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Hey, what a guy.
What a guy. I did like that, though. It's a fun detail about him is that, like, and throughout this whole movie, he's like, I don't like games or puzzles. I don't give a shit about any of that. I'm an actual detective. I solve murders. I don't...
Yeah, I don't play little stupid games. They're so beneath... I'm so good at this that it's almost like how Einstein forgot how to do basic math because he's like, well, I'm working at such a high level. Going all the way back, it's, like, harder.
Yeah, word puzzles and fucking Sudoku and your crosswords are not, they do not actually keep my attention.
He talks about Clue, that's very funny.
Clue, like, Among Us, these aren't...
He's like, I fucking hate Clue, it's so stupid.
Yeah, so yeah, just good movie, go see it. Huh?
Yeah, well, hey, stay in your home and watch it. All right, back attack into episode 12, the finale of Andor titled, Arm the Poor? Is that what it's called?
Become Ungovernable?
Yeah. Fucking get them, boys.
Against all odds? Is that what it's called? Or was that just fucking hell? Cut all this right out.
I will.
Oh, I knew this. Fucking hell. So, episode 12. The season finale of Andor, Rick's Road. There it is, man.
Good finale. The finale.
It is. It's kind of just as we called, really. I mean, isn't that... Obviously, the show set it up in a way that it was clear where it was going. I won't claim to be prophetic in any way, but... basically the crux of it is that it's Marva's funeral and, you know, almost all of our principal characters meet on Ferrix all to, basically everyone's trying to get Cassian. That's really what
they
it comes down to.
They all want him. They all want to. Well, the good guys, quote unquote, Luthen's group wants to kill him, and the bad guys, ISB, want to get alive so they can torture the shit out of him.
So they can find out about Luthen.
Yeah.
Which is fun. That's kind of a fun twist on it. And there's definitely shades of that throughout this whole episode of Luthen being like, oh yeah, maybe I am kind of the baddie. The only character who isn't involved in this is Mon Mothma. I guess we want to just do hers up front just because it is so brief.
So brief.
There's like three scenes. So she's picking up her husband from a bar or club or whatever. They're night out, and they have an argument in the back of their car about him gambling, and he's very adamant that he's not, and he's denying it all throughout, probably because he's literally not, because it seems as if this is just a fabrication by Mon Mothma, because she knows her driver's a plant, and as we see in the scene, he doesn't actually give them privacy. He starts listening on the conversation, so it's very much all intentional, right?
Yeah.
So that we see directly where this guy comes from is that he is directly an ISB plan. He reports to Blevin there, that fucking goober. And so he goes back and he's like, "Yeah, this is what's going on. I think the husband's he's got a gambling addiction." And so when Blevin is like, "Oh yeah, there was this discrepancy in her accounts. I guess it's just this." So she's trying to
pit the heat off for a little bit.
Yeah. Put their radar on that so that they think, "Oh, it's this kind of benign issue of, oh, he's got a gambling addiction, not, oh, she's funding a rebellion."
And then the next scene is just her marrying her daughter off, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, introducing them, but...
Right, yeah, introducing them, but it seems like that's where we're going. Like,
yeah, well, yeah, that's clearly the implication of it all. But yeah, following up on the it's been a couple weeks now of this, and I said, this is last week or the week before, I was like, oh, she's probably going to find a different answer.
Yeah.
Vel's going to help her. And I mean, maybe we still will. I mean, it's left relatively vague. It could still go a different way in the next season. But we don't get any of that this episode. Even though she was so adamant about not doing it and all this and that, she just goes through with it. And she introduces her daughter to the corrupt businessman guy's son. So we'll see how that goes. And like, again, we said this last week, you know, part of the thing that makes this so complicated from like a moral kind of perspective of it is that her daughter seems still pretty like eager for it.
Yeah, she's on board with it.
Like, she's kind of excited, which is, yeah, just makes it all the more complicated, because it's like, is it really that bad if she doesn't mind? And well, I guess who's really being hurt? But it's like, that's one of those things where, you know, as a teenager, she might not know necessarily what's best for her. Even though it's a little patronizing, and it's just, it's how it is.
Yeah, teenagers, fucking dumb.
Yeah, so that's where we leave her here. So it seems where she's going. She's got no other solutions, basically.
She kind of has to more or less destroy her family, kind of to keep this rebellion going. Just, you know, like, do these sacrifices. Because, you know, no great thing was ever easy or comes without sacrifice. And this is unfortunate blowback.
And it's just her plotline hasn't necessarily taken some of the more dramatic turns that I predicted up top, where I was like, are they going to have to kill fucking
Perrin?
Because he's a dirty imp. And I think that still could come. I mean, we have very much seen that side of him throughout this whole season. Is like, he's listening in, and he's, God knows what he's doing with that info, or if or where he's reporting any of that. So like, his time still could come. His days might yet be numbered.
Oh yeah.
Let me see. Let me just say this: we never see Perrin Mothma in, or he's in, I don't think his last name is Mothma, but we never see Perrin in freaking, you know, Return of the Jedi. So I don't know. I'm just saying
he's not in that little circle in the scene in Rogue One we watched.
He isn't, is he?
No.
So something happens to him. Maybe he just sticks on Coruscant and just hangs out because he doesn't care. But we'll see.
Really? We'll see.
I mean, to be fair, we've never heard of her daughter before outside of other some extended.
Materials.
Old expanded universe stuff. She also had a son, apparently, in the old expanded
universe. And they killed him?
Yeah, he died on Hoth.
Oh, Jesus.
He was like a rebel soldier.
Well, at least he was down for it.
And like, she gets this like final hollow message from him, where he's like, "I love you, Mom. Love you, Dad. Tell Lita I love her too. She's doing good. See ya. This walker's about to step on me. Bye."
Oh, well, how am I going to send this out?
And she's like, "Ah, cool. Well, more rebels, so I don't even mind, because rebels, because I love the cause so much, I don't even care."
My son is dead.
It's a weird comic, I gotta say. She takes it too well, if you ask me. A little too well.
A little too in stride.
Yeah, like, all right, yeah, that's what we're here for. But yeah, there you go. So then, the main plot here, though, is Ferrix. And it literally is, like, it's everyone, right? So Dedra's arrived with her Death Troopers, and she's ready to oversee it personally because she wants to catch Cassian. She still believes, and I mean, she's right, of course, that Cassian has information about Axis and that he could be of use to her. So she wants it. She's tried to orchestrate this, go long enough with this funeral that it's like a trap. We have, like you alluded to there, we have Luthen and Cinta and Vel, all from his cell, who are also there. They're just ready to kill him so that he can't speak if he wanted to.
Yeah, spreading secrets. We got all the Ferrix guys.
We have of course, everyone from Ferrix is still there. Cassian himself shows up. We also have Cyril and
Pop-belly Scottish guy.
Yeah, I think his name is Mosk.
Yeah, something like that.
They also are showed up to try to get on the action. And yeah, basically all just kind of comes to a head. It's they do a funeral in this custom that they have with there's like a marching band and the thing with the brick they talked about last week. And Cassian uses this as a cover to sneak into the hotel, which is now the Imperial sort of headquarters, to break out Bix. So while this is all going on and the funeral and everything, and B2 has this this hollow recording of Marva that she recorded before she died, which is this big speech, which is great. Big fan of that, and how they got to rise up, and they've been all asleep because, you know, things were easy for them and the Empire didn't really bother them, so they didn't care. But now they're awake and they've realized that, like, well, not only does it affect us now, but we probably should have been worried even when it didn't affect us because, you know,
any evil is bad evil.
Yeah, yeah. A threat to something anywhere? How's that go?
Oh, I don't know. Friend to freedom, one place is bad for everyone, kind of, sort of, maybe.
Something to that effect.
Yeah. It's a really good speech. She's real big, and the Empire takes, after a while, gets sick of it, and some guy walks out, and he's like, shut it off, and he, like, covers BB with his coat, and, like, throws him, and then, you know, then shit hits the fan. They start doing a big riot. They try to protect, like, they're like, oh, hold the line, keep him out, like, keep him contained. At one point, the son of the kid, the guy who got, like, tortured before Bix, who we find out is dead, like, confirmed dead, he makes a little bomb, a little pipe bomb, bombs the Imperials, all their bombs go off because they're stupid Imperials, and then just chaos ensues. There's a big, like, melee, there's a big smoke screen, no one knows really what's going on. Dedra gets separated at one point, and gets...
The mob gets her.
They get her, but they don't do anything. They just pick her up and go, oh, how are you? Sorry.
I thought they were gonna get her.
Yeah, just terror. I thought
they did something bad. I was kind of here for it. I mean... We've talked about how, like, you know, one of the interesting aspects of the show is that Dedra is, in strict terms, kind of a protagonist.
Yeah. We're following her active goal.
And for a lot of it, you're rooting for her until she starts to really butt right up against our other heroes, and you realize, well, these people are directly opposed. But, yeah, at this point, I was like, yeah, down with the fascists. I've had enough. She's fully on. She's, you know... And we've seen that again across the season. That was a very intentional choice from the creators here. Is that, like, at first you're like, oh yeah, you know, she's a woman and she's really sticking to the men. That's kind of cool, I guess. But as it's gone on, it's like, oh, she's also just, I mean, she's cool with torture and you know, all this killing, and she organizes this whole, you know, kill all of Krieger's group and everything. Like, so any sympathy you had for her should be well drained by now. So when the crowd got her, I was like, sure, take her out so that Luthen doesn't get caught, because he's we need Luthen.
Yeah, we
screw this guy
first of the season.
But Cyril comes to her rescue, and so that's, I think that's going to basically be what I kind of called last week, right, which is that Cyril does something good, so now they can be like, ooh, Cyril, you can come work in the ISB, it'll be sweet.
You're totally not unhinged a little bit.
Yeah, that's right, they're both kind of unhinged though, so I guess it works.
They're a power couple or something, whatever the kids would say.
Gross.
There's a cool thing with Cinta where comes to a head where she finally meets up with the Imperial spy in the town, and
she catches on. Well, I guess not super early. I guess it's not clear to us if she knew beforehand or not.
Mm-hmm.
But once he starts, like, giving Dedra a tour of the city, she's like, "Well, that guy's an ISB agent."
Yeah, absolutely.
And so in the chaos, she fucking shanks him in an alley.
Yeah. And he, like, and I really thought that it was going to be more like a more dragged out scene, like, oh, I've got you and I'm going to, like, toy with you and then I'm going to have my comeuppance. But I liked how quick it was, because he doesn't see it coming. He just happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's very good at what she does, because she's following him and the way the scene turns out, it's like, oh, she was clearly following him in a clumsy, bad way to get him to notice her. And then when he does notice her, she pretends all, acts all scared and, oh gosh, oh wait, no, wait, hold on. And but then she just fucking stabs him and he's dead. He's a dead idiot because that's what they all are. These arrogant assholes. And he's like, I'm gonna get her. He didn't think for a second, like, well, she was following me down this alley. Maybe I should exercise the slightest bit of caution. Oh, I've been stabbed. Oh,
I'm bleeding out. Oh, very understandable. Have a nice day.
Good. Screw that guy.
Yeah, I'm glad he's dead. I'm glad some Imperial got their comeuppance.
There was a lack of Imperials actually getting, like, just killed, I guess I'll just say, to be honest. I really thought that the prefect guy, I don't know his name, I probably should for trivia purposes. He has a couple close calls, and he makes it through every time to just be more of a dick.
Yeah,
this whole episode, he's like, Dedry, I want to smash more of them. I'm angry, I'm violent, I'm an asshole. I'm even more of an asshole than you, Dedry.
If that's somehow even possible.
And she's like, no, we need to get him alive, you idiot. And he's like, brruh, brruh. But then eventually he's the one who's like, you know what, screw this. I'm going to throw my cape over this hologram. Guys, smash him with your shields. And they take him down because he's the first one out there. Brasso, like, smacks him real good. And he just gets back. He just crawls his way through. Nobody stomps him. He deserves a good curb stomping,
I think. Yeah, at least get his hand crushed or something.
And then he gets exploded when the bomb goes off, but he's still mostly fine. And then he's the one who gives them all the order to open fire on the crowd. And you're like, oh, that's upsetting.
I really thought they were going to pick up the guns and start shooting him.
I thought for sure they were going to start shooting. Someone needed to shoot that guy. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen. He's going to catch a stray blaster bolt or something right in the arm.
I think the only other guy who gets big comeuppance is Nurchi.
Yes.
Who gets exploded for being a collaborator, which also, I mean, fair enough. I think that's pretty valid.
Yeah.
Can't size your own people like that. Come on, Nurchi. What the hell? Yeah, we get that Cassian owed you money and all, but...
They made it right.
He gave that money to Bix or whatever. She didn't get that to you? I mean... To be fair, she did get captured and tortured shortly thereafter, so maybe she never knew.
She was... It was on the next to-do list.
Slipped her mind, yeah. Yeah,
because her mind is broken.
Still, though. Come on, Nurchi.
And speaking of reminding me, broken
your people.
Cassian goes and finds Bix again. He's like, all right, Bix, let's hit the road. She's like, if they catch me, they'll be really angry. And I'm like, damn, they're like kind of fucking Sean Chander.
Yeah, they got her pretty good.
And she's just kind of sitting there, like, shaking in, like, a room. The camera's looking at her.
Luckily, and he says this as well, right? And the dialogue says this, that once he's gotten her out, she seems to start to improve pretty quickly and maybe return her own. So now that she's not in that dark room and under the direct threat of violence, I think she'll
recover.
Return to some sense of normalcy, so that'll be all right.
Mm.
She made it through, though. I mean, I thought more people would bite it. The I don't even know what was his job. The guy who worked at the, I don't know, the place that Cassian he called yesterday or last week.
Oh, the shop. He calls it the shop, but I do not remember what they shop. I don't remember
what they do. There was a
little alien with him in the first episode.
Yeah, in the second or third episode, there he tries to. Or I guess it's the second episode. What's he trying to get?
He's trying to buy like a part or something.
Yeah.
Oh no, he's trying to get a package through.
Yeah. Did he want like to ship something from that guy? So maybe they're shipping this. I don't know. It's not really important. But that guy goes down. Brasso makes it through though, which I was glad for.
Oh yeah.
Bix makes it through. V2 makes it through. The kid makes it through. So
that one guy who works in the shipyard made it through.
Oh yeah, he's all right still. Yeah. The only one, it's just unnamed Ferrix residents who bite it. Which is nice, I guess, in the sense of for us as viewers, but I really did expect to get a couple more deaths this episode.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I mean, the past couple weeks, I've been kind of hanging on. I'm pretty sure that Luthen would die. Luthen makes it through just fine. Again, if anything, he doesn't really do much of anything this episode. He does a lot of watching, which is, I think, is notable for his character, right? I just, you know, he didn't give a nice big speech that I was enjoying from him all season long, but that's fine. But his kind of thing this episode is like, oh, wait. These people care in like a real passionate sort of sense, because he's in the fight so deep. Like at this point, I think he's almost removed from that side of it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, this is what I do. It's kind of a job. Like, yep, we go clock in and we do the rebellion. But he's like, oh wait, yeah, this is what we need more of, is people who are doing it because they care,
because they have no other option.
Which is what he's been talking about all season, right? Of like, we need to make it bad. We need the Empire to oppress people so that they care. And they stand up. And then when he sees it, he's like, oh, wait, this is that.
Yeah, it's the thing I wanted the whole time.
Oh, this is people actually like standing up and being, doing it for themselves. This is what I need. But it's like he's never actually witnessed it before.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I think that they really listened to me. Huh.
This is cool. Maybe I don't have to be so bad. Maybe I don't have to be executing my own guys.
Yeah, maybe I don't have to like pull a page out of Sagarera's book.
Like, maybe there is something else here that we can... There's a different path that, yeah, utilizes this idea that people care and are trying to stand up. And it's not just all clandestine and we use a guy once and then try to assassinate him. Which kind of comes right up to the end, right? So,
yeah.
Luthen's like, I guess it's a bust then. And he heads out, and Cassian loads up his friends on a ship to escape, and they make it out. And then Luthen returns to the Fondor, and Cassian's waiting for him, of course. And I mean, that's classic fashion. That's classic spy stuff, isn't it? You get to your room, and he's already in the room.
He's been there the whole time.
He's been in there the whole time. He's disabled your droid. And Cassian's like, so you came here to kill me, right? So you're going to kill me. Just kill me now, then. Just kill me. And he's like, what's your angle here? He's like, nothing. Just kill me, man. Or bring me in. And of course, I mean, just gonna bring him in. And there he is. That's what we've been waiting for all season, right?
That's what it's all about, baby.
There's just a couple also lines. So there's, in addition to that speech, the recorded hollow thing, right? There's a couple things that Brasso tells Cassian that Marva
says to him to tell Cassian. Most of it is just so he doesn't blame himself. Because he was like, I should have been here. We argued the last time I was there. Like, I should have made this right. I should have come back sooner. And he's like, nope, that's not what she would have wanted. She's going to tell you to stop. Don't say that. Like, nothing, what do you say? Nothing you could do. I love you so much that it overrides.
I love you more than any wrong you could do. Which is really, that's a super nice sentiment.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting relationship they have. And there's also a couple flashback scenes with
his father, Clem. With
Clem in this one, which is nice too. Yeah, we see a little bit more of that relationship. It's cool. I saw this week a little bit of discourse, if you can imagine.
Ooh.
People were talking about Marva and how someone went so far as to say they don't have any sympathy for her character at all because of what she did to Cassian. And I don't think it's that simple, really. I do think that we are meant to question that. We talked about this when we did the first couple episodes, right? That there is a weird of like, wait, they just took him? But I also think that from what we have, you know, been able to glean from the story, it is true that if they hadn't, he would have died. Like, they didn't steal him from
a family.
They did, right? But I guess it's not just so simple as they stole him from his family as much as it is that they did save him from certain death. So, I don't know.
Yeah, they saved him from his Lord of the Flies community.
Yeah.
Gave him, like, that a was real being, life.
That was soon to be overrun by the authorities, right? So, I don't know. It's just not that simple. And again, there is elements there, and I think you're meant to think about it on some deeper level, but I also don't think you're supposed to hate Marva for that.
No, not at all.
I don't think that's the actual intention behind that, is that Marva's actually the secret villain here because of that. I don't know. That's weird. I wouldn't necessarily, like, deny anyone for bringing that element in it and you know, looking at it from that perspective. And especially because clearly Cassian's group there is very much, like, you know, analogous for, like, an indigenous population and all this stuff. And then there's definitely real-world parallels to be drawn there, but I just don't think it's that essential to this particular story. But, you know, that's what I'm talking about. I do think the show wants you to recognize Marva as a good character.
Yeah,
and a positive force.
Right. I like her sentiments in her speech when she talks about how it's easier for her to, like, tell them to fight when she's dead now. Like, she doesn't actually have to do any of the fighting. And how she's like, if I could do it again, I'd wake up early to, like, just fight them in every turn I could. If I could know that this was happening, which I think is also very nice. It really riles the people of Ferrix up. I did like in the marching band how all their instruments are just like space versions of instruments we have.
Yeah, right. Obviously, based off what we can hear, they are just those instruments. It's slightly Star Wars up.
Like the flute is just a regular flute and just some tubes tied off at the end. Very funny.
They have trombone-looking things.
Yeah, they got a weird...
No, wait. What are those?
Which one?
Those tubas?
Yeah, they had little tubas.
Tubas, yeah.
And they had a French horn.
Trombones are the...
Right? Slidey boys.
Slidey boys. Yeah, no, they don't have trombones. I have a smoke. I also like we get a little bit of, which we knew it was coming sooner or later, is the... We get a little bit of the manifesto.
Yes, we do.
In voiceover, which I think is good. I saw Mace Windu literally call that out on his Twitter. He was like, predictions, definitely getting a Nemec... manifesto voiceover, and we got just that, so that was fun. That was a good call. Yes,
you had some good ideas about
really great ideas.
Nature of it all.
About, was it like, you know, even though it seems hopeless at times, that every action that they do is all, it's moving the line forward, and sooner or later,
they'll break.
It'll be enough. it'll, you know, even if it's all just tiny things, one of those tiny things will be the, you know, sort of
the straw that broke the camel's back, as precisely. It were.
And so the Empire will lose, so long as you keep doing these little things, which I really liked. I liked he talked about how, like, tyranny is unnatural, like, inherently, and their whole system here, it's not natural, and so it takes so much work to
keep it
to
maintain around.
That it's just not feasible in the long run, that eventually it has to fail, because, yeah, you need too many people working nonstop to do it. And I was like, yeah, I like that a lot. I totally vibe with that. That makes a lot of sense to me. So yeah, that's good stuff. And clearly all of that put together, which again is what we've been, I mean, it's obviously been clearly where this show's been headed all season, but Cassian finally makes that conscious decision himself to,
join the rebellion.
Yeah, to join it full on. There's another one of the things that Brasso, relays from Marva. What is it? It's like someday the things you feel and the things you know are going to meet, and then you'll be like a
leader of unstoppable force or something.
Yeah, like an unstoppable force for good. And that's clearly what's happened here. It's everything that she said and did and everything he's seen and experienced in the prison and all that, like, it, you know, it's a combination of, like, the, you know, loving the things he loves and hating the Empire for what they are have come together, and he's like, yeah, you know what, I should do something here. And he's there. He's ready. He's ready to go. He's joined with Luthen. And I did, like, Cassian doesn't give much in the way of emotion there, but Luthen, he cracks a bit of a smile. It's like one of the first times. I guess the other time would be after the Aldani raid, you see some genuine, like, joy from him.
Yeah, laughter. And
he's like, hey, man, we got him, huh?
Yeah.
We got one on ball side, rolling. Which is cool. So, yeah.
We get a... they finally pay off the Anton Krieger plot as well.
Just pull it over, they just get him.
They just kill them all. They're like, we're still kind of dead. Which I think kind of we don't get to see it because it goes just to show how much they don't care. Like, it's like, oh, yep, and they're all dead. Like, there's no reason to show us that because we've been told several times by everybody that if they go through the plan, especially because the ISP knows, they're just all going to die and they're just going to get massacred.
It was a worthy sacrifice to make, in, you know, by their estimation. So there, and we see Lonnie in there, and he's clearly not the biggest fan. Obviously, he's doing his show, right? I mean,
he's doing his job.
He's not doing anything outwardly to give himself away, but he's like, yeah, there it is. And you're just like, oh, Lonnie, there's our boy.
There's the fella. I know he's reporting into Luthen.
I know he's a good guy at heart. It makes you wonder, though, how, like, where does this happen? Where's these change occur? How'd Lonnie end up on the good team?
I don't know. Maybe he's just down for it.
I guess so, but it's like, you are still in there. You're certainly doing the ISB stuff. What's that about, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe we'll find more about him in season two.
Well, yeah, it seems like, again, most of these characters are continuing on. We really didn't lose anyone of note, I guess. So.
Yeah, not at all.
Which, I was kind of surprised by. I thought maybe they would close out a couple of these plots to go forward, but I guess not. I guess at this stage, I assume that most of these characters are going to make it through the second season too, and then we'll get bigger payoffs at the end of season two here for Cyril and Dedra and Luthen and stuff. You know, our original characters from this show, of course. Again, obviously we know what happens to Mon Mothma and Cassian, but like the original characters from this show are the wild cards here, the unknowns, which is interesting. It'll be good to see.
Yeah, I think... Should we talk about predictions for next season real quick? Just right at the end here?
Well, we could. I mean, the shame of it all is that it's 2 years away.
Yeah, so almost not even worth it. I think we can make some pretty... I mean, basic predictions.
Yeah, well, so we know that this...
I mean, is robot.
Yes, K2SO. I don't know. So here's the thing. So we know it's another 12 episodes, and we know that it's four... Or I think we're pretty sure that it's 4 3-episode arcs, each of which jumps forward about a year.
Oh.
Because we're 5 years to Rogue One, right? This whole season took place within a couple months. This is going to have time jumps between each arc so that we can get right all the way right up till
Rogue One.
So, like, I assume we're going to have a time jump between now and the first arc of a year, and then...
Every year.
So going to each one until we're about right at Rogue One time. So, there's going to be a lot of stuff in there, because initially... This was going to be 5 seasons, each season of which was one of these years, right? This being the first year and so on and so forth. And they've really truncated that, I think for a couple of reasons. I think probably budget stuff. And also, apparently after doing this season, they kind of realized that would be too much of a... Too big of a undertaking, right? Especially with two-year seasons like this.
Oh, it'd take forever to get them all out.
Yeah, it'd be a decade before they were done with this. That's just kind of... That's not really tenable. So I imagine there's going to be a lot kind of in between the lines there.
Yeah.
I also think, I don't know, everyone seems so certain that K2SO is going to be shown on screen here with the season two, is, you know, how they met and all that. I also could see it just as easily going the other way, and they just don't do it in between arcs.
He's just got
K2SO, so. I don't know. I mean, they have covered it in a comic, so unless they wanted to retcon that comic, or unless they're going to make Tony Gilroy follow it, I don't, you know.
Who knows, yeah.
And so if you just don't show it, you don't have to worry about disrupting the canon, so. Beyond that, I mean, I think Cyril's going to, again, be in the ISB and crown up the ranks. It'll probably be a thing if we cut away every time, and there's probably going to be some direct parallels between the two of them, right, as Cassian...
Rise in the Republic, kill Rise in the Rebellion.
Yeah, right.
Imperials.
Yeah, as Cassian goes through and is, you know, we're going to see the Rebellion properly form, of course, and you know, they've already said they're going to Yavin, of course, and everything, which will be fun. I saw a lot of people talking about what kind of cameos we could see, which is fun. Ooh. You know, this season was pretty much devoid of cameos. But even though that's not a focus of the show, and I don't think they're going to be, you know, like, gratuitous about it, I think the second season has a lot of potential for cameos, just based off of that it's about the Rebellion. It's about, you know, early days. And it's going to be at Yavin with all these same characters and stuff. I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't have a handful of cameos, because otherwise you'd kind of going out of your way otherwise, right? To explain why these rebel leaders aren't here leading the Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Hera could very well appear. I mean, Hera gets a name drop in Rogue One, and they're going to have an actor portraying her in Ahsoka, right? So could just use the same live action actor,
get her likely, going there.
Who is maybe a Mary Elizabeth Winstead? We don't really know.
Hmm.
I think you could use any of the Rogue One original characters. I mean, Draven, Merrick, those are like the two of the general guys, right? I mean, one of whom is Lily Cassian's handler in Rogue One, so I would assume he's going to get some play. You could use Admiral Raddus. You could use Admiral Akbar, for that matter, if you really
wanted Vagar.
To. Yeah, those dumbass senators from the Rebel Council. Not a fan of those people, but I guess they're around.
They're part of it. They got to show up, I think.
You could use General Dodonna, who is, well, in Rogue One, obviously they had to recast him because 1970s. But in the new version, he's played by, what's his name? The Knight from Barristan Selmy from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
That guy could show up. You know, lots of potential. Oh, Bail Organa. Do you think we didn't get him at all this season, did we?
No, I think there's a good chance he'll show up next one because he loves being part of the Rebellion.
I mean, they put him in Kenobi.
Yeah.
Put him in here.
Why not?
I'd say so. Yeah, you're right. He loves it. He lives for it. He's one of the earliest rebels. He had functional rebel cell as early as like 1 year following about it. Based off that Ahsoka novel, like a rebel cell with pilots and A-wings and shit, like doing stuff. So
wow,
he's definitely gonna show up. Honestly, we could maybe even get more rebels cameos if they were bold enough. That feels, I guess, too much in just cameos for their own sake.
Yeah.
I do think these are going to still stick to, like, well, if there's a story need for one of these characters, they'll show up, but otherwise we'll see. I think, people also been saying Krennic. I don't see that. I don't really know what function Krennic would serve in this story. I just mean, like, yeah, I'm still working on the Death Star. Still working on it. That thing you're going to destroy. Not in this series, though. I mean, you're destroyed in the movie that comes after this series.
Yeah.
It's not really relevant to this series in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but I'm here now, at least.
Which I guess we didn't mention, but there's a post-credit scene, which is just...
Perfect segue for that.
It's basically the revelation that the things Cassian and the guys working on the prison were parts of the Death Star, which was, I think, a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, we talked about that on the show, I think.
Yeah. Somebody was saying it was probe droids or something, but it felt like it was going to be the Death Star.
And it was. Absolutely.
So that's going on. You could even have Darth Vader, maybe, if you wanted to. I mean, I think that's getting beyond a little, but I suppose you could.
What would stop you?
You could have Tarkin, but then you got to do Tarkin digitally again. Are they willing to do that? Probably not on a TV budget, are they?
Do you have Thrawn?
I guess you could have Thrawn. He's around.
Yeah.
So, why not? Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's not around.
Oh.
Well, it depends. But, you know, at the end of Rebels, you know, he's gone, right? So that takes place about maybe a year or two prior to Yavin. So basically, he'll be around for some of next season, and then at some point he'll
have to fuck off and do something else.
Yeah, he'll leave. So I don't think they're doing Thrawn, though. Again, those feel a bit excessive. I just think as, like, flavor, background filler, basically, more or less, for some of the rebellion scenes on Yavin. We're just going to have some of these dudes there. I don't think it's going to be major story stuff and anything.
Mm.
I think they'll just be around because that's where they would be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, but anything else? I think that's covered.
Yeah, fair enough. I do think, I mean, gosh. So we made it through this season, but I feel like Luthen can't live through the whole show.
No, I think he's second season on the chopping block.
I just don't, it just seems.
It wouldn't make any sense. It
makes sense.
Why would he not be in anything else?
Yeah, why would, well, of course, that's the classic one. That's again, the folly of all prequels to a greater or lesser extent. But more than that, that's just, it works for his character. I mean, also they could do the bit of a, you know, bit of a bait and switch there of like, oh, he's got this martyr complex to a degree, right? He's got this savior idea going on of how much he has to give everything and he's sacrificing his whole life for everything. And then, you know, maybe it would be interesting to play off that by having him not literally die.
Yeah. So he has to like him live on.
Yes. And that's, you know, honestly, that's more challenging maybe for him as a character because, you know, it's easy to do almost anything when you have this knowledge that like, oh, I'll be a martyr though. It'll be sick. I will die probably, but everyone will think it's cool. Well, they won't think it's cool. I guess that's his thing too. I don't know. Whatever. The point is actually having to live with all the bad things he's done would be more challenging to him. So
they're just dying quickly and easy.
Could go that way as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Hopefully get more, maintain the Mothma stuff. Maybe get a little more clear. I guess the one thing that I claimed pretty big last week was that I was like, oh, they're definitely going to resolve Cassian's sister.
Yeah, they didn't.
Zero further mention of that at all.
Yeah, they don't mention it very often at all. Which anyway,
it's really weird, right?
Yeah.
I mean, zero further mention of his sister, nothing to do with his planet.
No, not at all. I thought no flashbacks to really on Cassian.
Yeah, I really thought that was going to kind of, it was kind of going to bookend the season here.
Be a through line.
Yeah. I mean, watching those first few episodes, we're like, it's definitely going to come up again. We'll get full fleshed out answers to all this. No, nope. We have nothing. We still don't know what the fuck that's about, really.
Yeah.
I don't know. We maybe never will. I mean, I guess I would say like, oh, season two. But if they went the whole first season without mentioning it, doesn't feel likely.
No, not at all. I'd have to agree with that. I hope they address it in season two and get a little bit more about his planet in the past. But you know,
right. I guess this is that kind of show where it's just like, you get the idea. You can fill in the blanks. It's not something we're particularly concerned with dealing with, though. So
yeah, for their purposes, they don't really need to address it.
No, they don't. It's just is what it is. We know there's some kind of disaster there. Everyone pretty much died, and almost no one made it off Canary. So they're a rare sight in the galaxy, and that's probably all we need to know.
Yeah,
but yeah, overall, really good. I don't know. I gotta say, Jack, we talked about last week. I mentioned someone's tweet, and then I showed you another one. This showed another one with you this week about how like this, you know, this season finale to a lot of people really was the payoff to the whole season and everything. And it's a lot of people were literally saying something effective like, you don't even, you know, because obviously people commonly say like, oh, temper your expectations, just, you know, come in, just, you know, don't get your hopes up too high. I literally saw several people explicitly say, you don't even got to worry about that. It's so good. It'll blow you away no matter what. I don't know if it's my favorite episode of the season.
I would say it's probably one of the weaker ones, truthfully.
Really?
It doesn't really blow my mind. Like, I don't know. Didn't feel like, felt very, I mean, it was very contained to Ferrix, but yeah, it didn't like blow me away. It felt just like an early episode, like one or two or three. It isn't bad to say, but not like, I don't know, episode 10.
That was probably the
best one of them all.
That's where I still land as well. I guess I wouldn't say it let me down in any significant way. But yeah, I based on some of these, I was expecting this to be like far and away the real culmination of it all, and the payoff, and the everything, and the best of the best. And it's just not quite there for me. Yeah. And again, it's very good and all, but it's not even my favorite episode. But that's fine. Again, I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it.
No, not at all.
I don't know. A lot of people were like really hyping it up, and it, like, you know, even to the level of like, yeah, this is like the best hour of stars you've ever seen. I think episode 10 was a better hour for me. So, but again, it really does have a lot of good stuff. Again, the writing and the ideas and the fucking thematic political stuff here maintains stays really strong. So, if you're into that,
it'll be perfect.
Yeah, it's great. Again, we got between Marva's speech and Nemec's manifesto. I mean, it's all just about how fucking the Empire sucks, and
you got to fight him with tooth and nail.
Fight him, and tyranny's got to be resisted, and we all got to chip in. It's good stuff.
Oh yeah, I really did like it. Very good Star Wars show. Can't wait for the Mandalorian season 3. It's the next Star Wars thing we got on the horizon. Can't wait for it.
With everything out here and it's fully wrapped up, do you still feel confident saying it's the best Star Wars show?
Yes, I'd say so. I think that's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to argue against it.
Yeah. Again, different. But I mean, it's not. I don't know, people want to like caveat it with all these things, and I find myself doing that a lot of times too. Like, oh, but it is, you know, it's the best maybe, but it's also got this and this, and but what about that? And it's like, yeah, I guess so, but also it probably just is. The thing I find myself doing is like, oh, but can it really be the best if it doesn't stand completely independently? I don't know why that's a thing that I have, but sometimes I try to caveat stuff with that of like, yeah, this is the best Star Wars show, but does it really work if you don't have, you know,
context?
And it's like, I don't think that's a thing I need to worry about. I don't think that's fair for Star Wars, because pretty much every Star Wars thing needs context other than
maybe the first,
like,
one?
The first three movies, yeah. Or whatever, right? Like, pretty much everything is kind of not made to work on its own, so
That's why it's a series.
Exactly. Know? It's still, you can't be like, well, yeah, I don't know. Again, it's just a weird thing that goes on between my ears sometimes, is I'm like, oh, but you do kind of need Rogue One, and you know, if you don't watch Rogue One, it doesn't really work, so does it work? And the same with the Clone Wars, is like, the Clone Wars is one of, you know, the best Star Wars thing that exists. But it's like, oh, but do you need the other movies? It's like, yeah, but that's fine. I don't think that's a thing, so. Overall, two B2s out of, B2 out of 2.
That's pretty good. I'll give it a 9 Cassians out of an Andor.
What is that? How many Cassians normally in an Andor?
10.
No. Well, all right. Pretty good, though. Pretty good. Very solid. Yeah. Very respectable score.
Respectable answer, I'd say. So that...
I would give this show 1 soul for a sunrise or whatever.
That's pretty good.
Burn my life for sunrise? Burn my...
It's ghosts haunted. His dreams are haunted by ghosts?
Yeah, he shares his dream with ghosts.
Kasper's, he's like, all right, Kasper, my turn with the dream. All right, you can have it. Mom said it's my turn with the dream. I get to use it.
Very good.
So I think that's probably working in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Say a nice little quick one. Very quick compared to our other ones.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Nothing wrong with that. For the holidays, a little holiday break for you fellas and for us. So with that, we're going to end right about here. Thanks so much for listening. As always, you can find us on Twitter and on Gmail at akatechjazz@gmail.com or just akatechjazz on Twitter. On Instagram at The Akatech Podcast. Our intro was done by friend of the show, Celery Salt. He's got a new song out on Spotify. He's got a new song out on SoundCloud. Give it a listen, and some stuff to come on Spotify soon. And our logo was done by friend of the show, Jeffrey Gonzalez. You can always find him on inkocean.jpg on Instagram or on Redbubble. And as always, we wrote it. We produced it. We built all the sets. Say goodnight to the people, Zach.
Good night.
Good night. Godspeed.